5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff.
Hey there, Earthlings. Welcome to another episode of The Danny Project, brought to you by Neo Abilities. I am your host, Tessa, and I hope you grab your aluminum hats because we're on another exploration into all things disability. If you enjoy what we're doing here on the podcast and would like to have access to some more exclusive content, please be sure to check us out and join the crew on Patreon.
Discovery, go at throttle up.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Danny Project. I have a wonderful guest here today. Michelle, do you feel like talking about your background and just giving the listeners a little bit of insight into where you come from and your experiences?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. And thank you for having me on today, too. I appreciate that.
Of course.
Well, my name is Michelle Steiner, and I have a learning disability. I was diagnosed with a learning disability in kindergarten, and I have had, a lot of experience with doing accommodations throughout school and throughout my job and that sort of thing. I live in Pennsylvania with my husband and my two cats, and I work in a school with kids that have disabilities. And another passion of mine is writing, and I've had articles published on The Mighty and other sources about having life with a disability.
I love The Mighty. What kind of stuff have you written about?
I have written about having dyscalculia. My first article was my struggle with opening a lock with my hand dexterity, because that's another issue that I have. I've written about not being able to drive and just everyday life that things with having a disability.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences in school as growing up with a learning disability in an academic setting?
Sure. When I was a small child, I was diagnosed with having a learning disability. That was, like I said before, in kindergarten. I was my parents' first child, so they didn't have a lot to base on what was normal, what wasn't. My preschool teacher thought something was going on. But when I got into kindergarten, my teacher started to notice that I really did struggle. I struggled with things such as tying my shoes. That was really difficult. Eye-hand coordination was hard. But the biggest thing that I've always had has been math. I struggled to count and do dot-to-dot worksheets. And they tested me and found out I had a learning disability. And I had to repeat kindergarten the following year in a new school in our district. And I also had to learn doing some specialty instruction. That was one of the first things they introduced, like how we do things. And it was really frustrating for me in the beginning. I just wanted to learn and be accepted by the other kids, because I also struggled socially as well. And it just didn't seem like it was really working. But eventually things did start to work. I was able to go into regular ed classes for science and social studies at the time. And I had the supports with having extended test time. And I also had tests being read aloud to me. Eventually, I was in all regular ed classes except for math, of course, and resource. So I would go in and get the help that I needed. And when I graduated from high school and went into college, I found a program that I liked that had accommodations, but I didn't use them initially. There was still that stigma that was attached to it, and my grades suffered. If I didn't use having extended test time or note taker, it was really difficult for me. And I also had people that didn't think I could do college. I had a psychiatrist who told me, well, you're probably not going to go beyond a community college. And I had professors who told me, your job choices are going to be really limited. But I went forward. I was able to get my associate's degree in early childhood education. I was able to move out on my own. And I worked in some schools. I enjoyed what I did, but I just always wanted more for myself. And I finally got that opportunity when I had to move back in with my parents for financial reasons. And the job I was at downsized, and I enrolled in a university. And this time, I took advantage of the accommodations. I did the extended test time. I did a note taker, and it was so much better. And I made Dean's List one semester, and I graduated with a bachelor's degree. And that's something that I was told by a professional most likely wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience with people telling you you couldn't you know, you can't achieve a certain level of education or a certain type of job because of your disability. And that was really frustrating as a child. Do you feel like that motivated you, or do you feel like it kind of got into your mental state a little bit?
I feel like it got into my mental state a little bit, especially when I was in my last years of high school, because things were really going well with having all those supports. And I knew when I left, there was that fear of how am I going to make it? And I knew it was going to be tough. And I had a teacher that told me, I don't think this is going to be a good idea for you to go to college and try vocational training school. And nothing there interested me. But there was one person that inspired me, and that was a student teacher that told me I could do college. And I thought up to that point, well, that's for people that are really smart, or that's for people that don't have disabilities. And she's like, no, you can do this. So that gave me that little shred of hope. But for a lot of it created a lot of fear.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice that she stood up for you and gave you that encouragement. It only takes one person.
Exactly. Just that one person to offer that encouragement.
Right? Yeah. And I think that's something that people can learn from, is that you don't have to be just discouraging to people with disabilities. And you don't have to be this hyper pro positivity cheerleader either, but you can be there as a supportive role.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does help. It really does help to try to get over those challenges.
Exactly. Yep.
What was your experience going more into the professional field?
Well, when it took a lot of tries to find the job that was going to work out really good for me. Some people were not very understanding on having a disability. I've had employers that you would go into a job and they wanted you to pick up on the information really fast. And they just couldn't understand, well, how could you have a disability? You're not coming in with a cane or a wheelchair. And you had to explain to them, well, this is something that I need, or something that is really difficult for me. And even I worked for a place that helped people that had disabilities. It was an agency that helped people that had disabilities. And they were not very understanding of someone who had a learning disability. They were more understanding of physical disabilities, which is definitely important too. And it took me a really long time to find a job where I'm working in a school with kids that have disabilities as a teacher's aide. And it's something that I always wanted to do. I knew I wanted to work with kids, but I knew being a teacher probably wouldn't be the best choice. And they're very understanding. So if I go into work and I might make a mistake, then they kind of understand, okay, then let's fix this. Let's go into that. They'll explain things again. They're really good on explaining things and just very understanding. And they work with me. And that's really important.
What kind of teaching do you do?
Well, what I work with is I'll work in a setting with teachers that are general ed, and they might have a child in there that has ADHD, or a child that has autism or a learning disability. And I'm just there to help them and the kids who don't have disabilities as well, that maybe they were out sick and they need something, a test read to them that they didn't get a chance to take with the rest of the class, or just somebody may not understand something and I just go and I help reinforce the lesson. So I get to work with both. And that's really rewarding, especially when I get a student that does have a learning disability, because whenever I get a chance to help them, somebody else helped me. So it's very rewarding to do that.
Yeah. Oh, I love how the full cycle kind of comes around and you're able to get them a person. I mean, you never know if that student is second guessing their abilities. And so that's really cool that you get to work with all of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. The accommodations part, I know a lot of people, when I think of accommodations for folks with disabilities, they think of, okay, ramps and the physical access part. What other accommodations do you feel like were useful over your academic and even into your professional career?
Well, a lot of times, I agree with you. We think of ramps and we think of rails, but a lot of times what has helped is clear instructions on what you want me to do, not just kind of giving a vague description, but I need like a clear thing of what you want. That's definitely important. Having that extra time sometimes just to be able to learn a new skill or to be able to learn new instructions, and time to be able to teach myself sometimes how to use that. Those are things that really help. And when I was in school, having that extended test time, just letting my brain have that time to process the information. And when I was a young child, too, having a test read aloud to me, even though reading has always been one of my strong suits, it's just sometimes hearing it read helps that. And sometimes I have to do that to myself. I have a set of instructions and I'm like, okay, how do I need to do this? And I'll read it out loud. And sometimes it makes more sense to do that.
If you were going to talk to any able-bodied listeners on the podcast, what would you want them to know about having a learning disability or living with a learning disability?
Well, one of the things I would like someone to know is just because you can't see the disability, it's there. And because I'll have a lot of people that I'll tell them, well, I have a learning disability. And they'll look at me and they say, well, you don't look disabled. And And it's there. And things such as a math disability, which is mine, do exist too. Because a lot of times people think, oh, learning disability, you must not be able to read. And there are people that have reading disabilities that do struggle with that, but mine is more with math. So I would say just to really accept that learning disabilities do happen and everybody experiences it a lot differently.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like learning disabilities, they have the same struggles as people with invisible disabilities or chronic illnesses? Do you feel like they're kind of in the same realm as far as the struggles that they face?
I think the struggle of having something that's going on that somebody can't see that they struggle with too, I think there is that because people can't see, oh, that person might have physical disability, where they can look at somebody and say that, oh, okay, that's something that somebody has. So I think there is a similar struggle. Some of them might be different. Like everybody is going to experience it differently. But I think that there is that commonality of having a hidden disability where people just can't see it.
Mm-hmm. In your experiences, what types of things have you seen been put into place either in a work setting or in a school setting that you found to be useful or helpful for people with disabilities and people with learning disabilities, things that they've implemented or anything like that?
Sure. I think just having that understanding of that people do need accommodations and things that work. At work, I have to emphasize, I really struggle with math. So I'll have to tell my supervisors that I work with, I have a learning disability that involves math. And the ones that have really worked out well are the ones that say, okay, we just won't send you with a kid that needs help with that, unless you're going to be just reading numbers, which I can do, and just everybody working together. But in that respect, if they place me more with helping kids with reading and spelling and things like that, that works out a lot better. So that's one of the accommodations at work and at schools too. When I went to university, I was able to find a program that I liked that didn't have a lot of math requirements. In fact, they had one and I was able to take a logics-based philosophy math class. And it was hard. I really struggled. And thankfully, I had a professor that understood that. And I was able to pass the class. I didn't do well, but I was able to pass that. And just to have those programs where somebody with a disability can kind of go in and they can find what they want to do and have people that are able to work with them to take classes that they need for the credits. And the school that I graduated from, they now have increased a lot of their supports for people with autism, for people with visual impairments, and they've done some amazing accommodations.
That's cool. I like that what you're saying, it sounds a lot like just being creative and open-minded to people with different disabilities and how they need to go about things to be successful.
Exactly. It's just having that, you know, being creative, because I think a lot of times we go in and we diagnose someone with a disability and we say, well, this is what they can do. This is what they can't do. And we don't have that creative. But the truth is, people are going to have, they might have a disability, but they have things that they want. And it's just a lot of creative problem solving with that.
And one thing I will ask you about is, you know, in a couple podcasts back, I interviewed somebody who was a faculty member at a university. And one of the things we got to talking about was in the meetings they had been in, there had been this conversation about the disability office and accommodations being kind of a coddling mechanism for those with disabilities, and that it's not going to be like the real world. What is your response to that? Because I didn't know how to respond to that.
Well, I think a lot of it is a person with a disability needs to have those things like accommodations, but the work does need to get done. It can't be you're going to go in and I'm not going to do anything. No, you still have to be doing the work with an accommodation. Mm-hmm. And in the real world, there are accommodations at places of employment that is mandated. Mm-hmm. But there are subtle ways, unfortunately, that employers do discriminate, and it's not a linear process. So sometimes in the real world, we do have people that discriminate. We do have jobs that don't work out. We do have people who don't always do the right thing. And 80% of employers typically win cases with employees with disabilities. So it is one of those things where we do provide the accommodations that you need, but you have to be able to still perform at at an accepted level at the university. And you have to be able to do the job as well, too.
Mm-hmm. So for folks that have disabilities who are either entering the workforce or still trying to communicate and find a balance within their workplace of getting accommodations, what sort of advice do you have for them?
Well, the first thing I always tell somebody before they go into either a school program or they go into a job is to really carefully research the position to see if they can do it. I know if I go into a job and it requires math or science, that's not a job I want to get into, because that's setting me up to fail in my situation. So it's researching what the job is. Mm-hmm. And I also am not able to drive because of my learning disability. So I try to look and see if the job requires a driver's license. And there are places that even if you're not going to be driving a delivery van or taking people around, they still want you to have that. So sometimes it's doing that careful research. Mm-hmm. And I've had jobs where I have said at the interview, I have a learning disability, and people were very accepting. And those are the kind of jobs and very accommodating when I got in. And I've had other jobs where I thought, well, maybe it's not a great idea to say that. And some of them haven't worked out. And I always consider those to be a blessing. But whenever I got into a job where I didn't say outright in the interview, then you do have to explain if you have some issues. So what I always tell people is when you get into the job, one of the things you want to do is you want to sit down and talk with your supervisor or your boss privately. This is not something you probably want to do in front of your coworkers. And I have had situations where I did have to talk about it. And it's always it's difficult, but you get in there and you're honest, but you're positive about experiences. And that has always been wonderful, to just be that open and honest, and to also listen to what they have to say too, because sometimes they can give some advice and look at that from another perspective, and just trying to state what you have and put it in a positive way of what you can offer people as well. And that just having that accommodation is going to help you do your job even better.
Yeah, I love that. And I mean, there definitely is something to be said for being positive about it, because I mean, you don't really want to go in there and make it like not a good experience or anything like that. But right. I do know that a lot of people with disabilities, and I've heard other folks without disabilities have this conversation about, when should you disclose your disability, whether it's in a professional setting or academic setting, or honestly, even a personal setting sometimes. I know you talk about sometimes you disclose it at the beginning in the interview process, and sometimes you disclose it after. Do you have any more insight or information or tips into that process for what you do for yourself?
Right. I think it depends a lot on the situation too. Sometimes, yeah, if you're in a job and it might be a job that they do cater more to people that have disabilities, or they have so much funding, it might be to your benefit to say you had a disability, because they have to have a certain percentage of people that have them at their place. Other places, it might be beneficial to say it at the interview because you want to feel them out to see if it's going to be a good fit. I remember I was at one job, and I'm really glad that I did speak up at it, because it just would not have been the place to work at. I said, well, I have a disability, so if I come in, I'm going to be riding on paratransit. And she looked at me and she goes, well, how are we supposed to handle this if we have the buses late? And I was like, okay, wow. This is an understanding. And then she looked at my resume and said, oh, you've worked with kids that have disabilities. I said, yes, I have. And she goes, we don't have any kids with disabilities at our center. Ooh. And I just, I knew this just was not the job for me. And I was glad I didn't get it. I was glad she didn't call me back that they didn't have that. So sometimes it's really good to say that because you can see what their comfort level is. And we have people who really aren't comfortable with having that. And sometimes there's just that fear when you do get somebody with a disability too, that they can't do the job or they're going to be a risk to the company. So it just really depends on the situation. Personal life, that is something too, that it depends on the situation. I may not, while I'm proud of having a disability, it's a part of me, it's not my whole thing. Sometimes if I do meet new people, I may not say it on the first time that I meet them, but if they want to go somewhere and my husband works and we can't get there, mm-hmm. they're going to find out, okay, why don't you drive? So, you know, eventually it does kind of come out with that. And people are usually accepting or nice about it, but they definitely have a lot of questions. And a lot of times that can be really hard for people, to accept because they can't see it.
Yeah, and that is definitely something to talk about, I think, is that when you do disclose a disability, what happens after that? Because we have some conversations about the disclosure process. Exactly. Yeah, but what do you do if they ask, maybe they ask questions that are rude or they ask questions that are ignorant, but they were well-meaning? It depends. And what is your perspective on the after disclosing process?
Well, the first thing I try to remember is I can't control somebody else's response or reaction. I can only control my responses and my reactions. And I think sometimes there's a lot of well-meaning people. Mm-hmm. Like I've had people that say, well, you can't have a math disability because you can do this really well, or you figured out a percent, or you did something. And sometimes it's just that gentle kind of coming back and just saying, well, I have a disability. Yeah. And just, this is what I, there's things I can do and there's things that I can't do. And it's just that coming back and knowing that I have to do what I feel is best for myself and not being able to control how somebody else reacts.
Mm-hmm. I know that one of the things when I've talked to able-bodied folks or people without disabilities, they have a lot of apprehension and sometimes fear around approaching people with disabilities because they don't want to say the wrong thing or they don't want to be offensive, or sometimes it's even more than that. They don't want to violate ADA or HIPAA or whatever it may be. And what is your perspective on that? Because I get asked all the time and I'm just like, just talk to us. It's not a big deal, but what is your perspective?
My perspective is to talk to somebody just as you would talk to another person. Mm-hmm. And if there's things that I maybe don't want to discuss or something that you might get the wrong impression, to ask or talk about it. And I think it's just talking how you would talk to an everyday person. I don't know if you would go up to somebody, another person that you didn't think was disabled, and be like, hey, what, can you do this? Can you do that? Or I think it's just how you would treat another person, because really everybody is pretty much has a lot of similarities. And I just have some extra things that I have to do, just different things to do the typical things maybe another person has. So I think it's just treating other people how you would want to be treated is the main thing.
Yeah, the golden rule.
Exactly.
Yeah, but we learned way back in the day, people still get nervous about that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I understand, because I don't know if you've had this experience, but for me, sometimes I see other people's disabilities and I'm not as well versed in them. And so I find myself a little bit up in my head, like, oh, what is the right language or stuff like that.
Right, exactly. And sometimes that's a learning process too. I remember we had a class that when I was in college, it was inclusive leisure. And we would go up and just how you do approach somebody that might be visually impaired or blind, or how you do treat somebody that has an intellectual disability. And they would give kind of some helpful hints, and we had to learn how can you adapt an activity so somebody can do that. And this was not even in the block of teaching people that had disabilities. This was just another class, but it was really good just to kind of get an idea. Okay, someone, for example, somebody's in a wheelchair. Well, you don't want to go up and hang on their wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And just when you talk about what to say that might offend somebody, a lot of times I know from my experience with working with people that were blind or visually impaired, people would get really upset when they would say, well, I watched something on television last night. They would be like, no, you didn't watch it. You listened to it. And really, that doesn't offend someone who's blind or visually impaired. They went, you know, they went there and maybe they couldn't see what was going on, but that's just how they, you know, it's just, it's one of those similarities that when we're speaking that everybody just says, oh, I watched television or I saw that movie.
Yeah, it's just common language between folks. Yeah, for sure. As far as disabilities go and caregivers and parents of folks with disabilities, what has been your experience with that in a child setting?
Well, I've had, you know, the experience sometimes, you know, to take care of a lot of those kids that have had those disabilities. And sometimes it can get a little difficult, especially if the kid's really good, like math or something, even in the younger level. So I've had to say, oh, I'm not really great with math. I try to give them an easy answer like that. And I remember I had a first grader in one of the classrooms I worked at and said, well, there's grown-up school for that. And I just had to laugh at that.
Yeah.
But we're able to make it work, though. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice for parents who might be entering, you know, their kids starting into school, or they just found out about a disability? Any advice for them?
My advice for those parents is not to give up on their child. My parents didn't give up on me. They worked with the school to try to make things work out for me with that. And just, they spent a lot of tearful homework sessions with me or studying for a test. It was frustrating a lot of times, but they knew and they saw the potential. And they would tell me when I was a kid, you have a learning disability and you just, your brain just works differently. And I think that's important too. I think there has to be that honesty that their child does have a disability and what it entails, but age appropriate. I think you need to go into every single detail and overwhelm them, but just give some simple age appropriate things. And another thing they always did with me too is I didn't have to have perfect grades. I didn't have to come home with straight A's, but I did have to try. And they knew that sometimes, even if I did try, I wasn't going to always be successful. But we just had to always just do our best, and your personal best is good enough.
Yeah, I love that. That kind of goes back to the being supportive and believing people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I talk about a lot is the value of people with disabilities in our society. Do you feel like having a learning disability has affected the way society sees you sometimes, or the value that they place on you?
Right. I agree. I think that a lot of times our society doesn't see that as being valuable. I've had, you know, definitely with going through the school, I grew up in a really small town where you couldn't hide that you had a disability. And people, not everybody, but a large percentage of people didn't view me as smart or as a valuable friend or classmate. And they were pretty accepting as long as you fit into their narrow box. So I think sometimes as a society, we do put people into these narrow boxes and they don't like things that are different. Everybody kind of wants to go into that normal aspect, you know, check off that normal box. Mm-hmm. And I slowly had to learn with having a disability that I did bring value in and that our world does need all kinds of thinkers.
Yeah. So what I was going to ask you about was just like your personal life, having a disability and navigating, you know, personal relationships with an invisible disability.
Right. It took me a long time to find my husband. And there have been people, like before I got married, that were not, didn't want to have that. I've had people that have told me that, you know, outright that that's not something that they wanted to have. And I had someone that was breaking up with me that said they were tired of taking me places. And, but when you find the right person, exactly. Thank God that didn't work out. But, but when you find the right person, you know, that's just, there is a learning curve. I mean, there are some things that we've kind of had to learn together that, okay, I can't do this and this is why. But we've learned how to handle that. And in fact, on our first date, he asked me how it felt to have a learning disability because I felt that comfortable with him to disclose it on that date. I was the first person that ever really asked.
Yeah. And what was your answer?
I'm trying to remember because it's been a few years. It's been a while. But I mean, I think I told him, you know, it can be a little frustrating, but I tried to put some of the positive aspects. But
I love how positive you are and how kind of vibrant and open-minded you are, because it can be really tough to navigate these types of things.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's awesome that you're so open to that. Since you deal with, you know, parents and stuff a lot, what would you recommend to folks to try to start having more discussions about disabilities?
I recommend that people do talk to their kids about disabilities. Sometimes I know we want to shy somebody away if they see somebody at the store, especially if they have physical disabilities, and they ask, well, what's wrong with that person? And I think it's just really important that they have a discussion. Okay, that person has a physical disability. I think it's also gauging whether maybe that person doesn't want to have somebody come up to and ask to. Sometimes I know that it can be difficult if somebody does ask, but also just talking with them that there are people that may think differently. There's people that might walk differently, and just giving that understanding at a young age that people have disabilities and it's okay. And they're not broken, or it's not necessarily okay what's wrong with them. It's just, this is just a part of who they are.
Yeah. And I love that. And I think that that's part of like breaking down the stereotypes of disability, sounds like. Is there anything else you could think of that, because I rack my brain about this all the time, is how do we break down those stereotypes of disabilities? Because a lot of them are very negative and very inaccurate.
Exactly. With breaking down the stereotypes, that's one of the things I try doing with my blog, where I write articles on life with having a disability. What is dyscalculia? Because a lot of people aren't familiar with that. And it's just getting that information out of what they are and what they're not, because there are a lot of misconceptions on what disabilities are. So I just want to, that's one way to do that. It's also having those conversations that are open and just giving the right information.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think, you know, one of the folks that I was talking to before, the same one that was a faculty member, we were talking about folks who are able-bodied. I didn't feel like always had the information that they needed, or didn't know where to find that information.
Right.
And one of the things that she brought up that was really interesting is that the idea that it's not the disabled person's responsibility to educate other people, just like it's not the responsibility of folks who are people of color or LGBTQ to always bear that burden.
Right. I agree. And that's, once again, that's gauging what the person does want to talk about. It really isn't my job, but I do it because I want to get the right information, but also it's to connect with other people that have disabilities. So if I have a mom that their child or dad that their kid's being diagnosed, I want to provide that it's not the end of the world. There's that hope there. And also for the child that's going through that too, there's that connection as well. And it is telling people for what I want to say, but no, I agree. There isn't an obligation that you automatically have to do that. And sometimes I've had to learn the hard way. If somebody was saying something, there's a time to speak up, and then there's a time to keep quiet about things too, because I don't have to go out there and, you know, always give an explanation as well.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned connecting with other folks with disabilities as well. I think that's one thing that people either don't realize or forget about, is that there's a community out there and there is culture within that community. And can you speak a little bit more to the disability community and what you've seen from it connecting
Well, sure. I've seen a very positive response. What I love is if I get an article or blog post published and I get a person that has a disability and they say, that really touched me because that's my life. Or I never thought anybody else thought that way. Or I didn't have the verbiage to say that, that's what it's like. And you captured that. And I think that just having that connection is wonderful. I also, there's some virtual groups that I'm involved with where some of them are just plain groups, which is great. And other ones, they have activities and journal writing workshops and all different kinds of disabilities. And we just kind of get together and just have the interest. And we just, you know, we talk about what it's like to have them, but also just other things in life too, that go on, and just have that connection is so important.
Yeah, it's important. And I was thinking when you were talking, I don't know that people would realize how isolating having a disability can be, because you do grow up kind of thinking, well, am I the only one? And disabilities are so individualized too, right? So even if you find another person, you're not always going to connect with them the exact same way. So yeah, I think that's important that we continue to build up our community and that we have able-bodied folks who are also, you know, wanting to be supportive of that community as well.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Do you feel like that your writing and your work is a form of advocacy for you?
Yes, I do feel it is a form of advocacy for me. I feel that I get a chance to say what works for me. I get that chance to speak up for myself. And I also get that chance to maybe help somebody else out that has a disability or needs or wants information too.
And one thing I've heard from other disabled folks is that growing up with a disability in particular, that advocacy that you have to do throughout your whole entire life can be very exhausting and very time consuming and draining. What has your experience been with that aspect of it?
My experience with it has been very positive. I'm doing what I love to do. I've always loved writing and reading, and I generally have had a positive experience. I thought I was going to write some other things, and I can remember I was in a writer's group, and I had a friend that told me, you know, you really should write about your story. And initially I thought, oh, I really don't want anyone to hear that. Oh, I kind of want to run away from having that. But once I wrote it, it was very, for me, it was freeing. For me, I got a really good reception for that. And I think it's finding the medium that you want to do, that you need to work on if you feel called to do that for advocacy, because there also is that choice. All right, you don't have to always speak. And it doesn't always have to be through writing or things like that. I mean, there are other people can do things if they choose to do like sports or things that they want. I mean, it's not that that person necessarily is an inspiration. We don't want to get into that, but we also want to give that person that power to say, to define what they feel it is.
Yeah. And I absolutely love that you brought up this inspiration idea, because people ask me all the time about it, and I don't feel like I have the best answer. So can you explain a little bit why being an inspiration can be problematic?
Right, exactly. Well, I can see where you can say someone's an inspiration, like with athletes or things that they do, with or without that, because that is something that's extraordinary. But where we run into the problem of inspiration is, if somebody's doing an everyday thing, like I've had people that have told me, wow, you're such an inspiration because you have a job. Well,
yeah.
Having a job is something that people with and without disabilities are able to have. The journey to get there might be considered inspirational. I mean, that can maybe inspire somebody that, okay, I can do things, but just being able to do ordinary tasks, those are ordinary things that everybody does. I just might need to do it a little bit differently. And I think sometimes too, with the inspiration, we see how it's depicted in Hollywood, where you either get a villain that has a disability and is shunned, or you get somebody that has superpowers. And there are people who are savants. I don't deny that. But people automatically think, oh, that person has autism. I bet that they're a Rain Man because they can figure out math or puzzles. And, well, there are people who can do it and there's people who can't. And it's just that inspiration that people get. And it's just not a reality with somebody that has a disability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you said it way better than I could say it. One thing I was thinking of was, I've been hearing a lot about, you know, the Special Olympics was recently.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I heard a lot about is kind of this correlation between the Special Olympics and inspiration and this false idea that non-disabled folks might get from watching people with disabilities in the Special Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
That they might place value on certain types of people for appearing able-bodied or going beyond that physical limit.
Right, because a lot of people will say, well, that person is missing a limb, and if they can do it, you can do it too. Well, not everybody has mm-hmm. that ability to do that. Even people who are able-bodied, I'm sure a lot of them don't, you know, everything might work well or average, but the idea that they're going to go out and perform an Olympian is ridiculous. I mean, there are people who can do mm-hmm. that. There's people who can do it with, and there's people who can do it without a disability. I know sometimes people will look at even comparisons with disabilities. I'll have somebody who will say, well, why can't you drive? So-and-so has a learning disability and they're able to do it. You should be able to do that too. And it's just everybody has things that they're good at, things that they're not good at. And just having that expectation. But yeah, like with the Olympics, of just saying, well, what an inspiration. There's a point that it is inspiring if somebody has that ability and they like what they're doing. And that is that's definitely an inspiration. But that can turn really quickly into something that objectifies the person that has the disability.
Right. You know, you're talking about it kind of being a unique experience for everybody. Their mm-hmm. disability may present differently, or the things they need or how they manage it might be different. Right. And I've always kind of thought of that as like a snowflake, right? They talk about mm-hmm. all the time about how snowflakes are unique. Well, disabilities are unique too. Yeah, I was also thinking a lot about, we were talking about this idea of inspiration and how it can maybe not be the best thing. But before, we had also talked about, you know, kids that you're working with who do have disabilities mm-hmm. and being there for them and being a positive role model. There's a difference there, though, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. To be that positive role model, because you want to be that role model that says, I found a way to do what I want to do, and there's ways to do that. And to have that inspiration to be whatever they want to do. And yes, they will have some roadblocks with that. Because I think sometimes we might get into a culture that says, well, everybody has to go to college to be successful. Well, not necessarily. There's people, I have students that might want to go to technical school, and that's fine. Or they might want to work right after they go to school before they decide to do that. And I think when we do transition goals, we want to give our students a plan of what they want to do. And I think they, especially our students with disabilities, need to have role models of people that do have disabilities that are accurate. I think sometimes we have like the idea that you either have these superpowers or you can't do anything. And I think they need to have a representation, because whenever I was in school, I didn't know anybody that had a learning disability that was a college. Mm. Or I've heard of maybe a story here or there, but I really didn't know somebody that had that. So I think programs that provide the mentorship and just a positive example is really important for our students that are in school.
Yeah, their representation is, and the role modelship, I don't think that's the word, but those things are very important. And I know, like, for myself growing up, I definitely had folks who were mm-hmm. either were disabled or were not, but they were role models for me. And I don't think that I would be in the same spot if I had that support and that vision that we need right. as a child sometimes.
Exactly. It's so important to have that.
It is. You know, not only for that individual child, but also for society as well, to see that you don't need to put disabilities in a box and say these are the things they can and cannot do. People have so much misconceptions about it that they put a limit on you that it's not always accurate.
Oh, exactly. And I think I heard it say one place, there's very few things that aren't permissible It's just there's wise choices and unwise choices. And sometimes, you know, you might get a student in there and they might have something in it. There's a possibility that may not happen for them. And that's not really my job to tell them that. It's my job to support them, to encourage them, and maybe to provide an alternative that's similar to what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But right. And some of them might end up surprising us, too. We don't know that what the future really holds and sometimes what somebody's capable of, too. It's just a lot of supporting and just not putting people into boxes or encouraging them. OK, this might be what you're labeled with. But there's so much more to you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And off of that, what would you like to see happen in the future as far as disability advocacy and changing stereotypes and those types of things?
What I would like to see happen in the future is to provide a society that is more accepting to people that might think differently, might, you know, just have different disabilities, different limitations, and that we just become a more inclusive society. To try to do that creative problem solving, because you know, there are people with disabilities that are out there. Our world doesn't need that check the box, one type of thinker.
Mm-hmm.
We all are here and we all have gifts that we can help each other out with.
Yeah, everybody brings something to the table, and people with mm-hmm. disabilities in particular, I would argue, are really good, skilled at finding creative solutions. And so, yeah, definitely don't put anybody in a box. That's one of the takeaways today. Don't put anybody in a box. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Awesome. And as far as where can people follow you or read your story or your blog, how can they get in contact with you?
Sure. You can find me at michellesmission.blog. That's a good place to find me. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, and you can find my articles on The Mighty as well.
Yeah. Yeah, The Mighty is awesome, and definitely check out Michelle's blog. She's doing some great work out there. And thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on today's episode and shedding some light on some of these things.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, Earthlings, that's it for today's broadcast. As Carl Sagan once said, somewhere something incredible is waiting to be known. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and I hope to see you next week. Be sure to check us out on social media at New Abilities Everywhere, and use the hashtag TheDannyProject to continue these important discussions around disability. You can also join the crew on Patreon for more exclusive content. Until next time, peace out.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.